fell. This has dislocated our entire economy. I think it's one of the principal reasons for our inflation today. We're importing half of our oil. We're spending $90 billion a year for imported oil. And I don't see any limit to the price because we have no alternative. Our own oil supplies are dwindling, even though we've taken off the controls and there'll be more oil found. I still don't believe we can ever meet the needs that we have. Now, I have mentioned several times a four-point program. First, I believe we should improve our relations with Mexico. Our geologists found a few years ago on a visit to Mexico that they have the potential reserves of approximately 200 billion barrels of oil, as much as one of the largest fields in the Middle East. And yet Mexico right now is only producing some 2 million barrels a day, and only 700,000 barrels of that is going to the United States. I believe if we could help Mexico with their unemployment problems, and they have 50% unemployed, and help to induce American businessmen to go to Mexico, give them low-cost insurance against nationalization, give them tax advantages, that we could make a deal with the Mexicans to double their output of oil and perhaps let us have 2 million barrels a day in addition to the 700,000 barrels which we are now importing. I think President Reagan has made a good start by meeting with President Portillo and by setting up another meeting in April. And I hope that as a result of these meetings and good relations between these two men, that something will be done to improve our importation of Mexican oil. This is the safest kind of oil we could produce because all we have to do is to run a pipeline. We're now importing gas from them. And I would like to say that the Carter administration, in my opinion, bungled the relations with Mexico. But I'm glad to say that finally these have been patched up. And it would be no difficulty, I think, to increase our supply of oil via a pipeline. The other thing we must do is to use more coal. You as mining men, I think, will appreciate the fact that we have enough coal reserves in this country to last us for 200 years. We could produce coal and substitute coal in every boiler in the United States by giving incentives to the public utilities and also to the industrial users, giving them accelerated depreciation, giving them tax advantages, even if necessary, low-cost, non-recourse loans. I think we could put in scrubbers and protect the environment. And if we were to do that, we could probably save a million or a million and a half barrels a day of imported oil. Japan is doing it. Within a few years, not a single boiler in Japan will burn anything but coal. And I see no reason why we can't do the same thing in this country. Thirdly, you heard Milton mention something about shale oil. And I'm sure, again, you as mining men must be interested in the great potential of producing oil from shale. In the three states of Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, we have 2.5 times the reserves in oil of the whole free world locked up in shale. And this oil is no different from the oil you pump out of the ground, except that when it was laid down millions of years ago, it never reached the stage of liquefaction. All you have to do is to heat that rock to 900 degrees Fahrenheit, and that oil will flow out of the shale as if you were pumping it out of the ground. Now, I'm proud to say that Occidental has been a leader in that field. 10 years ago, we saw, or foresaw, that the day would come when this country would would run out of oil. And we started then on shale oil, and today, together with Tenneco, we're building the first commercial project at Grand Junction, where we hope, starting in 1985, we will be producing oil in commercial quantities, eventually getting up to 90,000 barrels a day from a 5,000-acre tract which has reserves in it of 1.2 billion barrels of recoverable oil. Occidental has developed the in situ process, modified in situ, where we do it underground. We remove about 25% of the shale to gain access to the ore. We then hollow out a cavity. We explode the surrounding shale into this cavity. We introduce a gas flame, and when we heat the rubblized rock, the oil separates from the rock and drops to the bottom of this cavity or retort, and we pump it out. That's all there is to the process. Now, if we combine this with above-ground retorting of the other 25%, we believe that we can produce this oil, sell it at today's prices, and make a reasonable profit. And I think that the government should help by giving some guaranteed loans for part of the investment, say 50%, and let other companies participate in developing a shale oil industry. The government has 600 tracts, as good as the one that we have, which they could put up to auction. And I think we could develop a shale oil industry to produce enough oil, not only to take care of our own needs, together with coal, but also the needs of our allies. And last but not least, we should liquefy coal, just as they're now doing in South Africa successfully, and as the Germans did during the last war when they ran their Messerschmitts on gasoline produced from coal. Now, on the question of the potential crisis from the possible cutoff of our strategic materials, such as titanium, manganese, vanadium, many of which we depend on Russia for a large part of these supplies. I think here we should consider the question of improving our relations with the Soviet Union. I'm happy to note from today's paper that Mr. Brezhnev has made overtures to President Reagan for a summit meeting. I think we should not lose this opportunity to start a dialogue. I know that many people are skeptical about the Russians' intentions, but I happen to believe that their system doesn't work, and that in the long run, our system will prove to be the better system for people all over the world. But in the meanwhile, the Russians have built up a huge military machine. They have nuclear weapons equal to ours, and I think we must be careful that we don't miscalculate or that we don't make a mistake and find ourselves in a war with the Soviet Union. And I don't believe it would be a limited war, because I think today there is no such thing as a limited nuclear war, and we all know that if the two great superpowers were involved in a nuclear war, it would lead to the destruction of the people of both countries. A friend of mine recently asked a member of the Joint Chief of Staff and said, is it true that in the first day of a nuclear war, 100 million people would be destroyed on both sides? He said, that's an exaggeration, only 40 million. Just think of it. And yet we talk about limited nuclear wars. I believe if we would proceed vigorously on the field of energy and on the field of improving our relations with Russia, that we could bring this country back to its former greatness, I think that we could establish peace in the world. And when I'm told that all this cannot be done so fast and that there are risks, I remind the speaker of how President Franklin Roosevelt and the American people rallied to the crisis in World War II when the Nazis were sinking our ships, bringing in natural rubber. I was then in the alcohol business, and I recall how we converted our plants almost overnight to develop a synthetic rubber industry that was so vital to the war effort. Who would have believed that we could do this and build the Manhattan Project in the space of just a few years? When President Roosevelt was warned by timid members of Congress that he was going too fast, he said, "If we do not act now, we won't even have time or the opportunity to make mistakes." In 1979, we Americans spent $25 billion for imported ore and mineral products. It is estimated unless something positive is done, we could be paying out as much as $100 billion for foreign minerals by the end of the century. These are staggering numbers which have and will severely impact our balance of trade. Now, I'm hopeful that the Reagan administration will be making some favorable changes affecting the mining and mineral industries. I'm particularly encouraged by Mr. Reagan's pledges to open up some more federal lands for mineral exploration and to eliminate many of the regulations that now place unnecessary obstacles in our path. Such measures will help provide the nation with many of the vital minerals, both fuel and non-fuel, that it needs. The President is correct when he identified excessive regulation as a major obstacle to the development of critical mineral resources. I'm told it takes more than 17 months to obtain a prospecting license from the government and 3 years for a mineral lease and a mining plan approval. Permitting and licensing, again, sometimes takes more than 4 years, involving at least 6 different federal agencies with often conflicting requirements. Now, during my lifetime, I've been a man of many dreams and have been fortunate that so many of them have come true. As we move into a new decade, I plan to continue my personal crusades concerning the pursuit of peace and energy independence. Last but not least, I shall seek the improvement of our economy in the hope that it may turn back the tide which has eroded our confidence in the future of our country. There are still many obstacles which face us, but I firmly believe we have the opportunity in our grasp to find a way around them. And by all of us working together and supporting our new president, we can continue to make this country grow and remain the greatest nation on the face of the earth. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hammer, for your comments and these suggestions that certainly are so important to our industry and business and the system under which we live. Dr. Hammer has kindly agreed to respond to a few questions, if there are any from the floor.
Anybody like to ask Yeah, question? Yes. What was that question again? Will you repeat it a little louder?
I'm interested as to why you did not include nuclear energy as an alternative.
Yeah. I didn't include it because I expected it to be asked in the question period. I'm very much in favor of the use of nuclear energy. I think France, for example, has shown us that this can be done safely. And in France, I'm told that within a few years, 50% of all their energy requirements will come from nuclear energy. I think that the Three Mile accident was an unfortunate thing that set us back. But I'm told by experts that it was a man-made accident and could have been avoided. I hope and I believe that President Reagan will do everything possible to see that we develop a nuclear energy industry in this country equal to that which France and other countries of Europe are doing. You get up and speak a little louder, please. Energy and fusion. Paul Bailey, on my right, has made a very valuable discovery in Canada, what we think is one of the large uranium fields in a million cubic feet of gas. I think that while gas discoveries will help, I don't think the supply of gas is so great or the future potential of finding gas is so great that it will do more than just help with the fuel situation. And again, you can't run automobiles on gas. We've got to have liquid fuel. We've got to have oil. And right now, OPEC has us over a barrel, literally. So the enemy is OPEC. And as long as you have a cartel, no matter what you do, they're going to raise the price of oil. If we try to conserve, which we ought to do, the less we use, the more they will get for their oil. They're already talking about cutting down production now because there's a temporary glut. So as long as you have cartel and you have OPEC controlling this cartel, I think we're in trouble. And as I, in a way, was disappointed that President Reagan didn't touch upon energy in his recent speech because of the United Nations. And I think as a result of that, the Russians are going to pull out of Afghanistan. I know a lot of people are skeptical, but when Mr. Brezhnev says on the front page of Pravda, which is read by 16 million communists, that they're going to pull their troops out as soon as the situation there is stabilized and they're convinced that they don't have an enemy government on their southern border, I think he means it. And I think that this step that you read about in today's paper, this overture by Brezhnev to Mr. Reagan is a great opportunity which we mustn't lose. And I think that if Mr. Reagan and Mr. Brezhnev will meet after Secretary Haig and, say, Ambassador de Brinden have worked out the details, I think we could see an improvement, possibility of an improvement in the relations between the two countries, improved trade relations, perhaps SALT II modified but ratified by our government, and I think the peace of the world would be ensured, and I think that the whole situation in the Middle East would be diffused. Thank you very much.
Obey the law. They signed a consent decree over there, and I will put their feet to the fire and say, you must obey the law. We are a body of lawmakers here. And we should not have without giving to everyone. And I challenge you today to make sure that everyone is free.
Our mayor, Jane Byrne, came to this council and recommended to us 11 individuals to serve on the school board of the city of Chicago. And she came to this council and said, these are the people I want. I'm the first mayor in recent memory to have the opportunity to create a school board of my own choice, of my own formation, to meet the problems that we will have in this decade. And to the credit of this council, we adopted all of those school board nominees. This was the Jane Byrne Board of Education. And they took on a very significant task. They created new leadership and chose a very good man in Reverend Kenneth Smith. They chose, after long deliberation, a very good superintendent in Ruth Love. They undertook the heart-wrenching task of whittling down a budget that they didn't want to whittle down, but they had to do it, and they did it. And they took the desegregation bull by the horns. What a wonderful accomplishment for these 11 human beings to undertake in 1 year. And in so doing, they brought respect to themselves. They developed an internal consistency, an internal strength, despite their individual differences. And then what happened? While they were in the middle of dealing with the most sensitive, the most difficult of all problems, a problem that could have been solved years ago by not prohibiting blacks from moving into many white neighborhoods, the problem of desegregation of our schools, when they were dealing with that issue that goes to the hearts and guts of this city of Chicago, we had the unfortunate imposition of chaos, of disruption, of a termination of the continuity and the cohesiveness that was being developed in the school board and the city of Chicago on educational issues. The mayor wanted to get rid of two of her own appointments. That, in one stroke, undercut so much of what could have been positive for the city of Chicago. And I don't care that the two who are being discharged without the valor they deserve are black, and the two who are replacing them are white. It could have been the other way around. It could be that the entire school board would be white or the entire school board would be black. Race is not the issue in this determination. In my mind, the issue is, do we give those people on the school board who the mayor chose for us and who we approved the opportunity to fulfill their statutory mandate and to deal with these problems and to continue to deal with them in the constructive way that they have? The issue is political interference in our school affairs. And I think that every alderman on this floor, black, white, or Latino, has an obligation to look at it and say, we won't take this. We approve these school board nominees. We wanted them to do their job. They've started doing their job. Let's give them the opportunity to continue to do the job, and let's vote against this political interference in the affairs of our school children. Thank you.
Chair recognizes Alderman Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Before I begin, I would like to also commend Alderman Lipinski, who, in his usual way, did an extremely conscientious and admirable job in a very difficult situation. I'm a bit worried about him. If he keeps getting all these compliments from black aldermen, he'll be voted out of office. I also would certainly like to commend my colleagues, the previous speakers, Alderpersons Davis and Humes, who mentioned the overall situation of what is going on in Chicago and this nation relative to the suppression of black people. I would like to briefly talk about the qualifications of these two nominees. I only have 10 minutes. I don't need 15 seconds to talk about Mrs. Janice's qualifications. What I really don't understand, Madam Mayor, is even up to this day, when they are lame ducks, board members Scott and Davis are probably the most active board members we have on the school board. They've both done an excellent job. I recall your statement saying that you believe that they should only have one term, although it was only been a year. And I remind you that although you have not reappointed Mr. Villalobos, the fact that he happened to have been confirmed by this council a few weeks later than the two of them nevertheless makes his term end at the same time on 30 April. However, he is still on the board. I also noticed that our Hispanic brothers did not come in and testify against these two individuals, although every black on this floor certainly supported Mr. Villalobos and the other Hispanics that now sit on the board and vote with the majority. I won't go into it. We spent hours listening to her testimony, and there were 20 witnesses, every one of them against her, did not even know the length of a school board term. Her ignorance to school board activities was appalling, to the point where anyone who would sit here for the hours that we did and listen to her testimony could not in good faith vote for her. As far as Mrs. Bono is concerned, we had 36 witnesses there. She did have some people that came in on her behalf. But Mrs. Bono's testimony, whereas in many instances it was evasive, if you sat through the entire hearing, contradictions would come up time and time again, such as she felt that demonstrations were positive in keeping children in neighborhood schools. They were not against other children coming to neighborhood schools. However, she did participate when there was voluntary busing from children outside of her neighborhood coming into the neighborhood. In speaking about quality education, which many of us believe includes socialization, she says, yes, these social contacts are important, but they can take place somewhere else rather than the school system. Where, I don't know. She mentioned also that there should not be any seats reserved on the board for anybody or any faction or any belief. Yet later on in the testimony, she felt that her philosophical belief certainly deserves a place on the board. There were constant circumstances where there were contradictions in Mrs. Bono's testimony. The one thing Alderman Humes mentioned about the egg throwing being symbolic, I thought it was also unfortunate that when some of Mrs. Bono's supporters showed up at a board meeting in blackface, Mrs. Bono's response was, "I thought that was funny." And I think that shows a great bit of insensitivity dealing with the type of problems that we have in this community today. Middle education, which is also going to spill over into the neighborhoods of our city, based on the fact that these two women will be given a legitimate forum at least twice a month to make their racist comments and to upset people and to remind people that it used to be against the law to teach slaves how to read. The problem here is that you do not have to have the rock in your hand to create the attitude for it to be thrown. Everyone suggests that I'm not a racist. That reminds me of that gentleman who says, "I'm not a racist. I don't judge people by the color of their skin. I judge them by the width of their nostrils." We have that sort of situation here. We have people saying they're not racist, but everything they say and do certainly suggests that they are. Lester Maddox was mentioned here earlier today, and just, I would suggest to you that he would be very pleased with what is going on in this chamber and probably could take a few lessons. Instead of wearing ribbons for the dead children of Atlanta, in my opinion, they should be worn for the continued manslaughter of educational opportunities for the black children of Chicago. As was so eloquently put by Alderman Humes, again, and Alderman Davis, I implore on all of you to please understand what we are asking you to do, to have a One Chicago and to vote against these nominees. Thank you.
Through the hearings, and I heard Mrs. Bono be criticized for marching for beliefs that she had that were contrary to beliefs of other people. But, you know, it's ironic that if that makes a racist, Then Jorge Morales, who's a Hispanic in my community, who marched down to the post office for more jobs for Hispanic, apparently he must be a racist too, because he believed in that. And I remember a lot of leaders in the black community who marched for things that they believe. And I don't think that makes them a racist, because they believe firmly for views, and they go out and they seek to have inequities changed. So I don't necessarily look toward all these slogans that we see and the rhetoric that's said on this floor. I've heard every member prior to me get up and say that, you know, that this can create problems. You know, it can create problems if we start making this a black-white issue. And that's what we're making it. We're making it a black-white issue. I sat here through the last hearings a year ago, and I voted for all the black members, and I voted for the Hispanic members, and I didn't get up and say that, you know, gee whiz, I'd like to have all white members, or I'd like to have all Hispanics on the board. I think there has to be a mixture. I don't know if these two women are going to do a good job or a great job. I do know one thing. I do know Mrs. Bono knows probably more about the workings of the Board of Education than all the members up there get together. I do know that she and I've listened to Board of Education. I've listened to board members since I've been in the council come up, and I do know this woman knows where everything is buried, and maybe some people don't want to know that. I also heard that she and Mrs. Janice are not attorneys, and they're not PhDs, and they're not people who know all everything. But it's ironic. You're right. They're not lawyers. But Ehrlichman was a lawyer, and Halderman was a lawyer, and Nixon was a lawyer. So I don't have any great love, and I don't have any great enamorous with attorneys. So. I am. Alderman Burke walked out of the room. I didn't have that. that had nothing to do. I think if we really, you know. Sometimes we lose sight. Maybe some of my colleagues, and maybe I have in the past. We lost, are confirmed, and I hope they are. Then we get behind them. And we try to work for the kids of this community and try to make this a better place for all our kids to study and get ahead in. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam President. Just so I don't misconstrue your remarks, Alderman Mell, you weren't suggesting that Mrs. Bono and Mrs. Janice were equivalent to Halderman, Ehrlichman, and Nixon, despite being lawyers. Not being lawyers, no, okay. I'm not sure why you brought them into the debate, but I wanted to make sure I understood you correctly. I wish that we could all be here today speaking about nominees to high public office who would bring some positive and constructive leadership to our serious racial problems in Chicago. We have a very long and bitter and divisive history of race relations in this city, not only in the area of education, but in housing and employment and in many other areas. And that, of course, is what has brought us to the situation we find ourselves in today, with the very terrible, destructive polarization about which my colleagues have spoken. Within that context of that polarization, I too would add my compliments to Alderman Lipinski's conduct of the hearings, and I particularly want to applaud Alderman Davis's speech. It really, I think, laid bare what this issue is all about. And it is a racial issue, and it is a racial question, and we all ought to not try to avoid talking about that. It is more important.
Thank you. him.
Evicted, and we walked out to see how she was, and now we're not allowed back in. We were not evicted. We were not kicked out.
If I have to do it again, it's fine with me.
The rest of you folks aren't helping us out at all. You're clear the hallway, please.
All right, let's go. Clear the hallway. Everybody out of the hallway. Let's go.
Come on, girl.
No, we're not allowed.
We were not kicked out of the city council chambers. We were not evicted.
You're here to...
We're here to support Betty Bono because finally the Board of Education is capable, give a chance to have someone that is capable of serving on that board that knows what it's all about. And those people in there, all because she's white, they don't want her on. People on the Alderman on the west side says he's not having representation. We don't have representation on the southwest side.
What is your name?
Joyce Winter.
Who was the woman kicked out for?
One lady was asked to leave because she said a word. So we walked out to see how she was. She's a friend of ours. And now we were not evicted. Now we are not allowed back in that city council chambers. There's a Reverend Sampson that had got up 12 times. I counted it. And the head of security shook his hand. He was not told to sit down. He was not told to keep walking or not to keep walking around.
What did the woman say who got kicked out?
Got into the lobby.
Probably said, whoever was talking, I don't even know what she said. I tell you the truth, I don't know what she said. She probably said, I don't believe all this.
Miss, on such an emotional issue, is it realistic to tell people to just keep quiet and sit on their hands during a meeting like this?
I don't want to talk to any of you. You're all prejudiced against white. You're so lame.
am. Mrs. Lorraine Black was evicted from the hall, and we have absolutely no idea why, except for a white and a white board member is proposed. Mrs. Bono's appointment is coming up, and so they wanted to get rid of the white audience, and they succeeded. We walked out in support of Mrs. Bono, and I wanted to go back in, and I wasn't allowed to return.
We walked out to see if Mrs. Black
Bono
was okay.
If she was all right.
Mrs. Black was manhandled, and then they closed the doors on us and said we couldn't go in.
They forced her out.
But there are black people in there that are applauding, that are standing up, that are yelling out, and not one of them was moved out.
Absolutely right.
What's your name?
My name is Marge Sullivan, and just because we walked out to see what happened
That's
to Mrs.
Right.
Black, they will not let us back in that room. Now, is this right? Is this the law?
It's a public forum. It's an open meeting.
It's supposed to be an open meeting.
Who is behind this? I mean, what do you mean
Michael Coletta is the one that ordered Mrs. Black to be taken out.
All right, but you said they. The police.
The police have the doors locked. We cannot get back in. They are barring the doors.
I asked to just go back in. They said absolutely not. I was not evicted, so why shouldn't I be allowed to go back in?
We did not create any scene within that console room. We walked out to see if Mrs. Black was okay.
You want
to
see a scene?
We found out she was okay. We came out.
The black people my support. They were not evicted. I walked out. I was asked to walk out, and I walked out, and all of
Why
these
were you
ladies.
Asked to walk out?
I don't know. I must have said something when Oberman was talking. I don't even remember.
What
it was one
said?
Word.
Being white, you probably
can't believe what
hands.
You're talking about.
I don't know.
But you were here in support of Mrs. Bono, Mrs. James.
Yes, and they don't want us in there because we're in support of the white women. That's why.
We're from the Southwest Side.
We're from Marquette Park. They're from Hogan.
Her name is Mrs. Block.
Mrs. Block. Lorraine Block. Okay, and you're Marge
Sullivan. This is outrageous.